Our first reading is from the prophet Jeremiah, chapter 18. Hear what the Spirit is saying to the church. The word that came to Jeremiah from the Lord. Come, go down to the potter's house, and there I will let you hear my words. So I went down to the potter's house, and there he was working at his wheel. The vessel he was making of clay was spoiled in the potter's hand, and he reworked it into another vessel as seemed good to him. Then the word of the Lord came to me. Can I not do with you, O house of Israel, just as this potter has done? Says the Lord. Just like the clay in the potter's hand, so are you in my hand, O house of Israel. At one moment, I may declare concerning a nation or a kingdom that I will pluck up and break down and destroy it. But if that nation concerning which I have spoken turns from its evil, I will change my mind about the disaster that I intended to bring on it. And at another moment, I may declare concerning a nation or a kingdom that I will build and plant it. But if it does evil in my sight, not listening to my voice, then I will change my mind about the good thing that I had intended to do to it. Now, therefore, say to the people of Judah and the inhabitants of Jerusalem, thus says the Lord, look, I am a potter shaping evil against you and devising a plan against you. Turn now, all of you, from your evil way and amend your ways and your doings.
Before we go down to the potter's house with Jeremiah, I want to say something about the context in which Jeremiah finds himself. And not just for our edification, but because I believe there's so much there that speaks to our moment now. Here's the context in a nutshell. The time is the late 6th century BCE. There's a massive crisis looming, like it has been for some time. And even though there's real evidence on the ground that the region of Judah and the people of Israel are under threat, in this case, it's the Babylonian Empire to the north that's moving in, for the most part, life is business as usual. But the prophet Jeremiah, he sees that the end is coming. And of course, no one wants to hear it, but that doesn't stop him from talking about it. And instead of framing what he sees in terms of a political analysis, what he offers is a theological perspective, which allows for a whole other read on reality, and one that opens up possibilities that wouldn't otherwise be imagined. This is the gift and the challenge of the prophet Jeremiah. So, how does he interpret what's happening? Of course, he understands that Babylon is a rising power and is expanding its territory, but he dares to interpret the defeat of Judah as a consequence of the people's failure to keep the terms of the covenant that God has made with them. The covenant that described how they would live justly with one another, generously with the orphan and the widow and the stranger in their land and the land itself. A covenant that is about loving God and loving neighbor. And it was spelled out from the beginning that keeping the covenant would make for abundant life. Breaking the covenant would bring death and destruction. Jeremiah announces that at the heart of Judah's demise is that morally, ethically, the people have lost their way. They have disregarded the covenant. But then Jeremiah doesn't leave it there. He dares to make another claim, that while keeping the covenant matters deeply to God, there is this anguished yearning in the heart of God for a continuing relationship with the people. It's that yearning that we hear over and over again through the Hebrew Scriptures. Come back to me with all your heart, God says. How can I let you go? How can I give you up? So it's not over for God with this failure to keep the covenant, even while that was the condition that was laid out in the beginning. And then there's one more thing that Jeremiah picks up on. He exposes and critiques this unquestioned assumption, this mindset, really, that Jerusalem, the capital city of Judah, the holy city, is God's stronghold. Nothing can possibly come to grief in the city of God. The temple, after all, is God's home. The people are God's chosen. So the people imagine there is no need to worry. But they are wrong, and Jeremiah knows it. So why does it matter that we get a feel for Jeremiah's context and his deeper reading of reality? This is what happened to me when I started to get clearer on what Jeremiah was about and is about. Here I'd been over these last few weeks finding myself more and more convinced that this upcoming election will determine our future. And I'm talking the future and fate of the whole planet, as though everything hangs on the outcome of this election. Like if we don't choose politicians who will enact a Green New Deal, we're done, it's over. So I've been thinking that, by God, somehow, it's got to go that way. And yet that's a recipe for a kind of zealousness that can get ugly. It's one thing to be hugely passionate, but to be zealous. And then come election night, if it doesn't go well, what would keep me from total despair? Thanks to Jeremiah, this crucial corrective comes into view. I'm able to see that what I've been doing is imagining that politics has all the power, as though a political read on reality is the ultimate one. Still, I get it. We do need to care. We are getting that, aren't we? It matters how this election goes. But Jeremiah reminds us there's still a deeper truth, another power at work in and through the presence of God. Which brings us now to the potter's house, where Jeremiah is led to hear a word from the Lord. At first, it's a visual experience. The potter working, the clay taking shape in her hands, only then to see her smush the whole thing and start over, reworking the clay into another vessel that was pleasing to her. And what comes to Jeremiah as he watches this? It comes to him that God is saying, "Can I not do with you, O house of Israel, just as the potter has done? Just like the clay in the potter's hand, so you are in my hand. At one moment I may declare concerning a nation or a kingdom that I will pluck up or break down and destroy it. But if that nation concerning which I have spoken turns from its evil, I will change my mind about the disaster that I intended to bring on it. And at another moment, I may declare concerning a nation or a kingdom that I will build and plant it. But if it does evil in my sight, not listening to my voice, then I will change my mind about the good I had intended to do to it. So now we get the sense that this is not your ordinary clay. This is not a passive, neutral substance that will be manipulated at the potter's will. This is clay with its own agency, with a capacity to choose, to decide for itself. This is the clay of Genesis chapter 1, where God forms the human creature from out of the stuff of earth and breathes God's own spirit into it, such that it becomes a living being. This God-inspired, spirit-infused clay. This is clay that possesses something of the essence of God, not the least of which is freedom. This is clay that must wrestle with choosing for good or for ill. And this is clay that has the capacity to respond to the yearning of God's heart. And so the fearsome task is given to Jeremiah. Now, therefore, say to the people of Jerusalem and the inhabitants of Judah and to us, thus says the Lord, look, I am a potter, shaping evil against you and devising a plan against you. Turn now, all of you, from your evil way and amend your ways and your doing. In case we imagine that somehow God won't let utter disaster come upon the earth, let us remember that actually Jerusalem was destroyed and Jesus was crucified. Let us also remember that for several generations now, we have had the nuclear capacity to annihilate ourselves and the entire planet, and we have not. As though we have been aided by God's own endless, anguished yearning that we choose life. For all the catastrophic damage that we have wrought upon the earth, still we are given to trust that God so loves the world. And not only that, but that God so loves even the people of the earth, us, each and every one of us. And still it is for us to respond to that love, to turn and open our hearts to that most powerful, loving desire that, blessed be, continues to hum and throb and pulse through the whole creation, willing us, haunting us, wooing us to choose the things that make for life. So what would it be for us to make as our prayer, to carry as our prayer, to breathe this same prayer as the writer of that psalm prays? Search me, O God, and know my heart. Test me and know my thoughts. Watch closely lest I follow a path of error, and guide me in the everlasting way. There's a prayer for us.